Everyone, this is Tim Pichot, and welcome to the Liberty Advisor Podcast. This is episode 33, or at least I think it's episode 33. I really haven't been paying attention, and I know in the beginning when I started doing these, I had a lot of different Facebook Lives that I didn't count, and I had some different vlogs that I didn't count, and you know, it's probably really episode 100 and something. But in terms of getting the actual podcast and how many there are currently, if you go to iTunes, is I think there's 32, so I'm calling this episode 33, at least the 33rd official one. 33 being, you know, a very occult like number. I know there's, you know, 33 is the highest level you can get into the Freemasons, and there's some other stuff with it, but and that's sort of is a topic that I just decided to talk about right this second. But what we do want to talk about today is Donald Trump just minutes ago signed an executive order on retirement. Also want to talk a little bit about my 2 weeks without social media, feeling great. John McCain's passing and why the Fed is clueless on the real threat to the economy. All right, so let's get into it. So I wasn't initially even going to create a podcast. I only want to really, make one if I've got something to talk about. I've been really busy this week and off to a crypto meeting pretty soon. But I hope everyone has a good Labor Day. I'm trying to think what day it is over here. It really just kind of snuck up on me that I didn't even realize it was Labor Day until my wife mentioned something the other day. But speaking of labor, what Donald Trump is doing with this new retirement executive order is going to be great for small business owners. And this is something that does impact me directly in the field that I am in. So for those of you who don't know, I am a fee-only financial advisor specializing in self-directed IRAs, 401ks, alternative investments. We do stuff with crypto. So if you want crypto in your IRA or retirement plan, or you want to have something exotic, in addition to the normal stuff, so not to make this whole thing a big giant plug about me, but just want to say like how this, just want to parlay this into Trump's recent executive order, so let you guys know that I do have some credibility on this subject. But one of the other things we do is we have different protected growth strategies where we can effectively almost eliminate almost all the downside threat by using different type of options and things that we do to hedge. But anyways, that's not what I wanted to talk about today. And if you guys do want to hear more about that, you can email me at tim@innovativewealth.com, and you can find out everything you want to find out about self-directed IRAs and crypto IRAs and all that other good stuff. But anyways, getting back to the president's executive order, and I'm reading here from, I think it's newsday.com. The White House says the order directs the Labor and Treasury Departments to issue regulations to help businesses join together to offer association retirement plans. Administration officials say high costs discourage employers from offering plans like 401ks at a time when surveys show workers are worried about being able to live comfortably in retirement. And they should be worried about being able to live comfortably in retirement. And if you want to wonder why, I've got, a couple podcasts on this. I've got one that's entitled, I think something to do with, the perfect storm is coming and what the real threat is. I've got another one called the Trump effect and why good news is bad news. And then there was another one that's right around the Trump effect that was a Breakfast Club talk that I gave that really details out a lot of the risk in retirement. So I don't want to rehash all those. So you guys can go back to those previous episodes to get all that information and more. But why this is such a big deal, what Donald Trump is doing and how this affects me directly is, so last year I had a client of mine who, he works for a company, he's a CFO of a company, and they have a lot of different donut shops all around their state. And so when we were trying to evaluate whether or not it made sense to do some sort of retirement savings plan, because he came from a job where he had a 401k, and then all of a sudden now he's a CFO of a company without a 401k, and he's like, what gives? Obviously I want to be able to save for my own retirement. So, he had a his own self motivated interest of why he wanted to get a company 401k together. And one of the questions he asked was, well, hey, we know the other guy that owns like the other 90 donut shops over here, same franchise, and can we just kind of join up with them, like create like our own association? And up until about 24 minutes ago, the answer to that would have been no. And what people don't realize is there is a lot of different things that kind of go into having a 401k launch. You've got to have what they call a TPA or a third party administrator who's, you know, doing a lot of the paperwork behind the scenes and making sure the plan's in compliance. Cause there's all this other crap that I don't really want to get into today about like top heavy testing and making sure if you own the company that you're not just benefiting and you got to make sure that your other employees benefit. There's all these different calculations and complicated crap that most people don't care about. So I'm not going to talk about. But you've got that cost, and generally speaking, you know, the bigger the that's usually more of a fixed cost plus variable. So it might be, hey, the first 50 employees or X amount of dollars, and then $20 per employee. So that one, I'm not sure if there's going to be a gigantic savings. But then you have, when you get down to the fund level. So let's say you're at, you know, American Funds or Fidelity or Vanguard or whoever, and all of a sudden, let's use American Funds for example. How that usually works is they're going to say is, okay, well, you've got $1 million with us, so the price of your plan is 1.5%. And I'm just throwing that out there. I don't really know if that is what American Funds fee is, and sometimes they do what they call bundle it together, where they provide the TPA and the fund management in there, or you can get it unbundled, and there's all sorts of different algorithms they use, and there's all sorts of different pricing options, and I think with one of the companies out there, I don't want to name them, but I think there's like 26 different options, so it does get rather confusing. And it gets confusing for me, and this is something that I'm in, let alone, you know, the average small business person that's just trying to go out there and make a well-informed decision. So, you know, let's say all of a sudden, you know, you've got $1 million in your plan, and that's usually sort of the threshold where you start getting, you know, some better pricing. So on these brand new startup plans where you're only allowed to put in, as an employee, 18,000, if you're over 50, I believe it's 19,000, or maybe they allow you an extra 5. So I should know this off the top of my head, but I think it is an extra 5 if you're over 50. So that puts you at 23, but in an IRA, it's an extra 1,000. So that's where I was getting it. So if you've got an IRA, then and you're over 50, you can put away 6,500. If you're under 50, you can put away 5,500. So I'm not looking at any notes about this, just off the top of my head. And I am coming up for my CFP, Certified Financial Planner, continuing education renewal soon. So I'm going to get all learnified and all this information soon. But so, you know, you can imagine though, if you've got, let's say, 10 different franchisees owners, and they all have, let's say, $5 million in current 401k plans, or maybe they have nothing. Maybe they just want to start off, and now all of a sudden they're going to be able to hit that first $1 million threshold a lot quicker than they otherwise would have. Or let's say they all do have $5 million in there. Now all of a sudden, I forgot how many people I said. Okay, let's say you've got 5 in there. So now all of a sudden you've got $35 million. And so the pricing and breakpoints you're going to get are much, much, much better. So you've got, you know, usually like an advisory fee in there. Most of the time it's not a flat fee. Most of the time so instead of like saying, hey, we're just going to charge $40,000 for the plan, whether you have, you know, 1 million or whether you have, you know, 10 billion, usually it's going to be some sort of percentage of what's actually in there is usually what you see. But, you know, there's to each their own. I mean, there's definitely many ways to slice and dice this. But now that you can band together with other business owners, this makes things much, much easier. And I'm already gotten the wheels turning in my head right now of some potential use cases and people that I might want to bring this to, because this really is a game changer, especially if you're in like a niche business. Like I mentioned cryptocurrencies before. So if you're a cryptocurrency startup and you can do a self-directed 401k and you could put some of your own crypto in there, or maybe your own stock for a crypto company or your own ICO, and it is complicated, the rules surrounding this and how you're able to do this. But that's why it's not complicated. You talk to me and I get together with my people and we get it done for you. So that's how easy it can be. I'm the one that needs to know all the different rules that surround this. But if you've got something that you think is going to highly appreciate, and now you're able to then put your own stock in there, your own coin or your own token, and all of a sudden it takes off through the moon, well then now you can get either tax deferred or tax free gains if you have a Roth version, which most plans nowadays do have an option for a Roth. And I've got an IRA versus Roth IRA video it was the very first video I ever made. So, apologize for, I think the quality's good, but I've got some of these like little pop-ups and stuff that come up, and it was the first video I ever did, and I'm kind of like looking at the screen reading, or looking at the camera, and you can, you know, kind of tell I'm reading off something, but not. But the information is really good. So if nothing else, if you don't know what an IRA or Roth versus a Roth is, I would highly, highly, highly recommend checking this out. So this is a great executive order, great thing that he's done. And another thing that Donald Trump did that was really great was to promote actual free trade. And this actually came as a pretty stunning blow to the Europeans, who thought that their basically offer to the president and their olive branch to the president would be definitely good enough. And he told them that it wasn't. So what am I talking about? And I'm reading this off a Zero Hedge article from this was August 30th or yesterday. So today is August 31st. Probably should have led with that. And here is the quote. "We said that we are ready from the EU side to go to zero tariffs on all industrial goods. Of course, if the U.S. does the same, so it would be on a reciprocal basis," Malmstrom told the European Parliament's Trade Committee. "Sending the ball in Trump's court," she said, "that we are willing to bring down even our car tariffs down to zero if the U.S. does the same," adding that it would be good for us economically and for them. As a reminder, while the EU's car tariffs of 10% is higher than the general U.S. auto tariff of 2.5%, America imposes a 25% duty on light trucks and pickups. So with Europe offering a trade olive branch to Trump, what was the U.S. president's response? Simple. "It's not good enough," in quotes, Trump told Bloomberg News during his extended interview in response to the EU proposal. "The reason? Their consumer habits are to buy their cars and not to buy ours." Trump then went on to say the European Union is almost as bad as China, just smaller. Now, previously, he had a tweet that was along the same lines when he said, "The European Union is coming to Washington tomorrow," and this is back in July 25th, "to negotiate a deal on trade. I have an idea for them. Both the U.S. and the EU drop all tariffs, barriers, and subsidies. That would finally be called free market and fair trade. Hope they do it. We are ready. But they won't. ! And that is the point, is that is actual free trade. You don't need a Trans-Pacific Partnership that's, you know, thousands of pages long, that's written in secret, made by a bunch of technocrats who, you know, if you've got a free trade deal, why can't you write it on a napkin? Why does it have to be, you know, longer than the Bible? Because obviously it's not free trade. It's managed trade. It's crony capitalism. And that deal was absolutely terrible. I actually read part of the leaked portions on WikiLeaks, at least when it came to the financial aspects of it. I mean, it actually, like, in some of the third world countries, actually, like, legalized slavery and allowing to use slaves. I mean, in a nutshell, let's say you're Italy and you decide to ban Monsanto, which I guess now they're Bayer, ended up buying Monsanto, and Bayer has ties going back to the Nazis. So, what a lovely love child you have between Bayer and Monsanto. So now Monsanto is not owned by Bayer. So not, but anyways, let's just keep going on with the example. So Monsanto ends up, having their products banned in Italy. They're not. I'm just making this up as an example. Then let's say Monsanto says, "Hey, you know, you just cost us $5 billion. Then they can just then go to their own tribunal, and where they have their own judges, and it's just a corporatocracy, kind of one world government type thing. And they get to say, you know, "Hey, you caused Italy, or Italy caused you $5 billion worth of damage. Here's the verdict. You get $5 billion. And this is basically what the TPP was talking about. And so people want to talk about fascism, and all these leftist idiots want to, you know, call everyone on the right, or at least people who, you know, are right of where they are, fascists. Well, you know, they are, you know, their leaders were advocating for the TPP, which was actual worldwide fascism going on. So that was another great thing that Donald Trump helped get rid of. And this was a, you know, perfect example of what free trade really is. It's not the TPP, that is not free trade. And it's usually not anything else that all the politicians tell us is free trade. Just like when they tell us there's capitalism, they want to blame capitalism. It's almost never actually the fault of capitalism, because what we have now is crony capitalism. Now, shifting gears here, another thing I did want to bring up, and this is probably gonna, you know, piss off some people. I mean, obviously, if you're probably listening to me, you know, none of these comments are really gonna shock you too much. But you know what? Some time has passed, and, you know, probably a younger version of Tim would have, you know, probably been flipping out about now and really, you know, kind of laying into John McCain big time. But I know that all politics is BS, and so I'm not trying to, increase my blood pressure over any of this stuff. But, I want to get into, just some of the, who is John McCain. And one of the reasons why John McCain particularly pisses me off, I guess he can't anymore because he is deceased. So I want to be, somewhat respectful of him. But when I was going to a liberal arts school in upstate New York, SUNY Geneseo, where, I mean, this was a liberal arts school. I mean, I was outnumbered, probably, 90-1. I mean, when it comes to, any sort of conservatives on campus. And I supported John McCain, and this was, I was 22 years old, so forgive me that, I didn't really know, the internet wasn't as prevalent back then. Didn't really have, it didn't, that was right before smartphones. I mean, I think that was like right when like the iPhone was invented. So we're talking 2008, at other things that were going on. And so, my recollection of John McCain was, hey, he's this big war hero. And I remember hearing a story where one time someone said, "Hey, you're just coming down here to Arizona and you're a carpetbagger, and why don't you you haven't even lived here very long." And I guess John McCain then stopped and looked at the guy and said, "You know what? You're right." And actually, the longest I've ever been anywhere, well, since I've been in the military, was actually when I was at a Hanoi prison camp. So when he was a prisoner of war. So of course, he had to, pull that card again. And I thought that was, a great response, at least, when I was a 21 or 22 year old and didn't really know anything about John McCain. And I did support him. So then when I see people that I support and go out of my way and get lots of backlash, because obviously, everyone around me was voting for Barack Obama, living, going to school in upstate New York, going to school in New York at a liberal arts school, obviously there wasn't very many John McCain fans. And for me to, stick up for this guy, and then to see, find out, a lot of his history later on, and find and see some of the stuff he's doing, behind the scenes. And I did have some notes on this, just a tiny bit of notes. And one thing I didn't have in a note, but just popped into my head right now, is he's also, John McCain is the guy responsible for making sure the IRS audited all the Tea Party groups, or better yet, made sure they didn't even get in to having like any sort of 501c or 501 for status. And it was John McCain and his henchmen and the McCain machine that made that very well made sure of that. And so some of the other things that he's done in the past, I mean, I'm not really ranking these in order of importance, but you've got him at the center of the savings and loan scandal. It's not something that I'm really an expert in, but I have heard quite a bit about that in regards to the Keating Five. You have John McCain, who was posing with, I think the guy's name was like Baghdadi. I don't have this written down, but that this is the guy who was, I think one of the heads of Al-Nusra Front and the Free Syrian Army, known as the FSA. And he was advocating and saying, "These are great guys, and these are moderate rebels, and we need to fund our friends over there." Well, these friends ended up turning over their weapons to Al Qaeda, and then we changed the name of this group then to ISIS to basically confuse everybody. And so, in short, John McCain was, along with Hillary, was one of the basically main henchmen over here who were going ahead and funding ISIS. He's also was a guy who didn't do anything in terms of trying to actually figure out what really went on in Benghazi. There's other reports where he was preventing certain POW families of POWs from being able to get full records, and making basically certain POWs or their family members' life a living hell. I mean, basically, there's pretty much nowhere on earth he didn't want to bomb, maybe besides U.S. and Israel, and everywhere else. It's pretty much a war zone for this guy. You've got the USS Forrestal, which a lot of people speculate, and they called him Johnny Wetstar because he had starts that would, when he was flying, would basically, have like the flame kind of go like really far back off his jet engine. And the rumor has it that basically he did that, and then there was these big ass bombs in the ship, and one of those bombs ended up blowing up once it got exposed to the heat from the wet start. And I think there was actually quite a few sailors that lost their lives, and I think the ship ended up sinking. And a lot of the fingers are being pointed directly at John McCain for being responsible for that. And they said that he's basically also responsible for those types of bombs, which really weren't in use anymore at the time, for being in use, because his dad was one of the I think he was in charge of like the entire like Pacific Fleet. So I mean, his dad was super high ranking, and he'd crashed multiple planes, and basically overdoing like stupid stuff, like not any sort of like heroism. I'm not talking about when he ultimately crashed and became POW. I'm just talking about he downed multiple planes, as some guy just trying to out there, you know, hot dogging it. And anyone else, if their dad wasn't the head of the, you know, Pacific Fleet, would have been, you know, I might be confusing him with Jim Morrison's dad, who might have been the head of the Pacific Fleet. But anyways, I think his dad was an admiral, very, very high up there. I just wrote down like a couple quick notes about this. Don't have like anything, you know, hugely, you know, in great detail. So, you know, so when you're a 22-year-old kid and you don't know all this other stuff and all of a sudden you find out about this, and it really helps, you know, change your perspective on who John McCain is. I mean, he's also the guy who got the PP Gate dossier, who leaked that, which, you know, that's a whole nother story. I mean, and then what really, really gets me is he is the guy that was the main sponsor of the National Defense Authorization Act, which passed on, it was New Year's Eve, I think it was 2011 going into 2012, and basically said that anyone, no judge, no jury, could be killed by a, you know, basically by a secret like FISA court could basically authorize the killing of any U.S. citizen who is engaged in quote unquote, you know, terrorism or funding terrorists. Well, if John McCain funded al-Nusra after he made this law, then, and al-Nusra is a terrorist organization, then shouldn't John McCain have been killed secretly by the own legislation that he wrote? I mean, just you know, just want to keep all things, you know, being equal here. I think that would be very, very fair. I mean, this is also the guy that helped block immigration. Or sorry, he basically was part of the whole Gang of Eight trying to, you know, have open borders. Also the guy that helped kill Obamacare. I mean, really, the list goes on and on and on. And so I, you know, I don't watch the news. I don't have, I don't even subscribe to any of the local cable channels. So I heard, you know, they've all basically had a big hard on for John McCain, because I am doing this show out of Phoenix. So obviously, this is, you know, big John McCain territory. Even though I don't know anyone who likes him, even though most people around me and that I associate with are conservatives, and none of them like him. So. And they haven't really liked him for a while, so I don't know how he keeps winning. It's got to be all the 75-year-olds and 80-year-olds out in Sun City, and which makes you someone lead to believe that we've got the dumbest voters in America for, you know, having John McCain be in there and having, I don't know, Jeff Flake. I mean, Jesus. Do apologize for using the Lord's name in vain, but really what started triggering me is I was driving yesterday, and I'm on the highway, and you know, you see all these signs that are that, you know, the Department of Public Safety, but that they control, and usually it's saying things like, you know, drive hammered and you'll get nailed and things like that, and you know, these ones were all about, you know, big John McCain love fest and what a hero he is, and how, you know, they broke the mold when they made him, and you know, and why is this guy even a hero? I mean, he's a hero because, you know, he had a plane that got downed while he was trying to kill basically innocent, you know, probably women and children in Vietnam who had nothing to do with, you know, pretty much anything, which, you know, if you want to be a real hero, why don't you talk about why the war in Vietnam even started to begin with? It started over something called the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which you can actually Google that it did not actually happen. It was a made up false flag event where the U.S. said that, you know, that one of the ships, I think it was called the USS Tonkin, was, you know, struck by the Vietnamese, and that was the justification and what, you know, was the, you know, pulled on the America's heartstrings to bring us into that war and to create the war officially. I mean, it had been going on unofficially for a while, and I know JFK didn't want the war, and he said, you know, over my GD body, and then, yeah, then, you know, then his body gets, you know, laid out. So, you know, not getting into that conspiracy theory, but there are, you know, just so many different things that John McCain has had his, you know, finger on that, you know, I will say that, you know, living in Phoenix, you know, coming from, you know, close to like 120 degree days, that, you know, hopefully John McCain's blood is very thin, because I think where he's going, he's probably going to need it. See, I was able to do this, you know, pretty calm and collected without having my blood pressure go up too much. And another thing that really made my blood pressure go down the past few weeks is I've gone a little over 2 weeks now, about 2.5 weeks now, without being on Facebook. Deactivated my account, so I didn't fully delete it. And it really is, you know, somewhat heartening to see as soon as I delete it that the president, obviously this isn't because of me, but the president then starts tweeting out about shadow banning and starts tweeting out about regulating these guys, which, you know, for all I know, I mean, they probably want to be regulated because it's the smaller guys that can't compete with the people that are regulated. So it's always the big fish that want to be regulated. So, you know, is this a perfect attempt for them to force regulation. I know Trump also made comments about how what they're doing might even be antitrust, and he was referring to, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and Google, I believe. And what you'd have to be careful of is, even if they do break them up, well, who's going to have the ownership of these companies? I mean, when Standard Oil was broken up into, I don't know, I think it's like 26 different companies, well, John D. Rockefeller was still the biggest owner of all 26 companies. And basically, you know, same thing with, you know, Ma Bell, you know, phone lines back in the day. I mean, if you break it up, but then you still own all the pieces to it, I mean, is it really broken up? Because, I mean, you can, you know, if you're the biggest owner of one company and you're also the biggest owner of the other 20 companies, like, you don't think you know some people or can pull some strings to be able to collude on different things? But at the very least, I mean, it just shows the hypocrisy of these people. And I'm not really necessarily, you know, calling for Facebook to, you know, to be more regulated or anything like that. But what I do think people should do is, you know, go to platforms like DTube, go to platforms like Steemit, which is part of DTube. And there's a whole bunch of other ones. I saw there's like a Twitter one on the blockchain the other day called like Peepeth, that it was Shooter Jennings and Joe Rogan were talking about it on the Joe Rogan podcast. I got to sign up for it, but I haven't actually gone ahead and pulled the trigger. And there's a few other ones like this and a lot of other ones coming up. But, you know, if we're on their system, we're on their grid, you know, we've got to play by their rules that are, you know, obviously, you know, handicapping us. You know, we're swimming, you know, upstream with both our arms chopped off. And, you know, if we still manage to somehow pull out a victory, which we did back in 2016, well, then they'll make sure that now they'll, you know, tie a 50-pound weight to you too. And that's pretty much what they did in terms of all the shadow banning that's going on. You know, one day I reached 1,200 new likes a day, and then the next day I'm at zero, and I can only, you know, imagine how that happens. Or, you know, one day I'm reaching 1 million people a week, and then the next day I'm reaching 1,000. Or how can I have, you know, a post that gets shared 1,400 times but then only reach, you know, 2,100 people? I mean, over a 50% share rate. I mean, you got to be kidding me. That's, you know, obviously these things are being suppressed and gamed and rigged, and they were being gamed and suppressed and rigged even before the election. But that was mainly in terms of, you know, the feed and what's going to show up in terms of putting, you know, Hillary always in a positive light and all this different propaganda that was going out there. But, you know, the shadow banning wasn't huge back then, because they just figured, hey, you know, we've got 98% chance of winning, so why do we need to piss off all these conservatives and make it obvious that we're shadow banning? But now it's like, you know, they don't even care. Like, there's you know, excuse my language, there's zero fucks given at this point. And you know, there was a podcast from two podcasts ago where you guys where I did the actual video for this, and you could see in the video where it actually shows, you know, the just like all of a sudden it's like a meteoric rise, and then, you know, even faster than the meteoric rise is the meteoric fall in terms of the likes per day. So, you know, in the first 2 months I was around, I got 33,000 likes, and now I'm sitting at 32,000 likes. So, you know, 2 years later. So, I mean, riddle me that, how that happens. And this probably is the 2 year anniversary of that page. I think I had deactivated the account for the 2 year anniversary, but yeah, this would have been, I think 4 days ago would have been the 2 year anniversary on that. So appreciate everyone who's following me in, on the page. And if you, one thing you guys can do to help besides just sharing this information would be to go to iTunes and rate us, or any other platform you're on and rate us. You know, I'm trying to, you know, working things out at thelibertyadvisor.com to make things a little bit easier over there, but you can go to the different blog pages and then see, you know, what platforms, you know, you want to listen to it on. I think it's on 4 or 5 different of the big major platforms that are out there. Just had my watch go off because I moved my hand, and somehow it thought that I took a step, which usually is pretty good about that. And so I hit 2 times my goal. So I think I'm at like 8 or 9, I think I'm already at like 9 miles for the day. So, you know, pretty good day. Got back in and doing some training, but I know you guys don't care about that, so I'm not going to talk too much about that. And just real quickly, I mean, it is Labor Day weekend, so I don't want to drag this on too much, but, you know, the Federal Reserve is, you know, making things out to be like, oh, everything's all right. You know, there's no problems at all. You know, there's absolutely nothing to worry about. And I know several months ago they did a stress test. And on their stress test, the one thing that they didn't test, or they didn't stress, you know, was a scenario where there was high inflation and a recession going on. I know this is something that Peter Schiff, you know, harps on, you know, quite a bit, and I think it's definitely worthwhile of harping on. But you ask the Federal Reserve what's the biggest problem out there, and they say the fact that the inflation rate isn't high enough, and that, you know, right now they don't really need to do anything to you know, tame it because, you know, what they're going to do is since they want to average it out to two. So since we had all these years where it was at one, well, then now we can have maybe several years where it's at three. Because if you add one or you average out one and three, then you get two. But, you know, we had some years where it was at zero. Or the fear is, well, what are you going to do to stop that? Well, you got to raise interest rates. Well, then how high do you have to raise interest rates? And if you're Argentina, who the other day rose rates to, I think it was like 60% to try to stop the bleeding over there. But, you know, we have so much debt, there's no way that we can even go to like eight. And you've got Jamie Dimon of the, JP Morgan Chase, where he's talking about how rates could easily go to 5% on the 10-year U.S. Treasury. And I believe him. And the fact that he's even admitting this is sort of crazy. But the market is pricing in that maybe there isn't going to be as many rate hikes. So maybe there will be one or two more this year. I mean, it looks like there's going to be one in September. But after that, I mean, I'm not sure how many there will be in 2019 or 2020. And, you know, maybe 2.5%, 3% is as high as we can possibly get. And which is actually higher than I thought they'd be able to get to. But, you know, it just shows the next time there's a recession, we're going to do cut the rates back down to zero. Well, what if inflation's at five? And now we cut rates down to zero, we introduce more money into the system. Well, then that's going to be a positive in terms of increasing the stated rate of inflation. And you know that any time they mention, and I've got a little quick like 18-page ebook on this called How It's Rigged. So you can go to howitsrigged.com, which, you know, is a sub-site of the Liberty Advisor, and you can download that. It's free. I would recommend it. But we get into, you know, how they rig the inflation rate, the GDP data, the stock market. I mean, you name it. All these important different subjects, you know, we talk about unemployment data. I'm not sure if I just mentioned that. But I would definitely check that out. And, you know, the Fed is completely clueless when it comes to, you know, the threat of inflation right now. They're saying, you know, they're clueless in everything. They're saying that, you know, there's absolutely like nothing really to be worried about in the economy, which if you go back to 2008, Hank Paulson over at the Treasury was talking about how there's, you know, in May, there's like no problems. I think you've got Bernanke multiple times in 2008 talking about how there's no problem and subprime is contained and we're no recessions on the horizon while we were technically in a recession. So I'm not saying we're in a recession right now. I don't, you know, at least how they end up calculating this stuff, it makes it very hard to be in a recession, because if you say that the inflation rate's two and it's really five, well then, you know, that's going to make it much harder to get in. It's going to make it harder to be in a technical recession, which a recession is defined by two negative quarters of GDP growth. So why this is important, why the inflation rate plays into this, is let's say GDP was growing at 4% and inflation was growing at 6, well then now you'd actually be decreasing by negative 2% per year, which would, if you did that two quarters in a row, it would put you in a recession. So when they rig these numbers and they game things and they make things out to be much better than they are, that it makes it harder to technically be in a recession. And, you know, the Fed's absolutely clueless on this. And, you know, who knows? I mean, I think one of the ways to protect yourself if you're close to retirement is to head over to thelibertyadvisor.com or innovativewealth.com, where we've got some more insight on self-directed IRAs. And we can do some things over there where we can use some alternatives to help out your retirement. We can also do the protected growth portfolio for you, where we customize it for each person's individual needs. And, especially if you're sitting heavy in cash right now, I mean, I do think there are some merit. I mean, if you don't know how to use options and you don't know how to use some of these other advanced tools, you know, there's certain ways you can hedge your risk. I mean, you can hedge your risk by, you know, hey, keeping a ton of money in cash. Well, what happens if inflation, you know, picks up and all the horses are out of the barn, and now your $400,000 only buys you, you know, $200,000. Well, then now, you know, didn't do anybody, you know, any favors. Or you sit heavy in bonds. Well, you know, same thing. If interest rates start going up, you know, then the underlying value of your bond goes down. And unless you're rich enough to just be able to live off interest, which the interest in bonds is, you know, almost nothing, then you're going to have to sell at a loss and actually, you know, cut into your principal. So that's not good either. And so by having this really, it's like a have your cake and eat it too type strategy, where if the market ends up going up, let's say, you know, 30%, and because of our strategy, maybe you're up, you know, 26, 27, But if the market ends up going down 50, then maybe you're only down 3 or 4. And why I'm saying maybe in there and throwing that hedge word in there is really depends on the price of the option and how much of your portfolio we have hedged and all these other factors. Because, you know, if you're 25, we're going to invest in a little bit different than if you're 65. If you're, well-funded for retirement, it's probably going to be different than if you, you know, can't afford to lose a penny in retirement. There's all these different factors and calculations that go into this. But anyways, you can reach me at tim@innovativewealth.com. Hope you guys have a great holiday weekend and talk to you guys later. Take care.